Welcome, everybody, to my forum call or chats with Pat, whatever you want to call them, July 18th, 2016. We have everyone muted right now, so if the line's clean after a while, we'll open up the line and I'll get comments from people. I'm really excited to do this lately, this topic, and we got about 50 or 60 people that signed up for this and many more that said they couldn't come, they'd listen to the recording. So I think what I want to do is give you my perspective on this whole thing called mastery and where does it fit in coaching, but also where does it fit generically, you know, outside of coaching. Everybody had access to a blog I wrote called What is Mastery and How Does It Manifest in Coaching? And we're going to go over some of those details, but also more outside the envelope of that that blog. I've been doing a halfway through a six-month course with the Kansas Leadership Center on this same topic, and I'm enjoying it so much, I think I'll probably try to do this class for ILCT as well with some little twinges, little tweaks to it, I should say, not twinges. It's a topic that's exciting to me because I can tell you a little bit of history of how I came to this whole topic, and then having coaching find me, or me, I found coaching in the early 90s. I was one of the early coaches that helped initiate the International Coach Federation, founding members, first 15 conferences I went to, and I really was in the minority fighting against the title Master Certified Coach. I like the title Professional Certified Coach. I'm glad we created that. I think that made sense. But mastery, that's a tough one. And I'm going to give you some of those opinions today. I really was more interested in having people that had been in the field with longevity and maybe had published and maybe had done other things would get what in psychology is often called a diplomate, that you get rewarded for your longevity and your elderhood, if you will. That how do we measure mastery? So I'm going to talk a little bit about that today, and then you'll have a chance to make some comments at the end. I'd also love to encourage anybody that's got some thoughts on this to write me at pat@lifecoachtraining.com, and maybe we'll post some comments. I know I think this blog is also there, and people can make comments, but I don't know that we get a lot of followers that way in the comment section. So whatever you find useful, I'd be happy to collate some comments or just have email dialogues with people about this. So this whole idea of mastery, and mastery in anything implies a certain level of skill sets that you can quantify, that you can observe, that are attained through a long involvement in a profession or a sport or some other skill. So let's think of some names, and maybe I'm going to say a few, and then maybe we can open the line so you all be thinking too. Who are some known masters that we probably could have general agreement on? That Nelson Mandela in leadership and global peace certainly is a master at living a life, unbelievably after, 20-some years of being in prison. I think we could agree that he's achieved a level of mastery in the way he lives and purports himself. Yo-Yo Ma, music, cellist. I usually list Tiger Woods in golf until that fateful Thanksgiving car wreck and life since then, but certainly was a master. And even when they have the Masters golf tournament, you know, that's determined by those who have won a major. That's who gets to go to the Masters. So it's kind of an elimination already. We could probably all agree that Bill Gates, in technology and philanthropy, and I think also many other people in Apple too. Oprah Winfrey, if you think about when she first started her show, being rejected as a news person in Chicago, and then just created an unbelievable educational format, TV producer, books, movies, etc. Michael Jordan, basketball, and also marketing. I mean, he doesn't even play basketball anymore, and when he makes his Hanes commercials, he says like two words. That's pretty masterful. But he certainly was one of, if not the best basketball player that ever played. Steven Spielberg, film producer, Annie Leibovitz. If you know her art, her photographs of babies particularly, she's very famous and considered a master of that. So let's unmute the lines for a minute, Amy. If we don't have noise, I'll be able to hear from some people. And we'll see. Okay, so everybody's unmuted. I'm not hearing static on the line, so we're good. Who else have you thought of? Let's hear from three or four people. Just the name. Who's a known master to you?
Eckhart Tolle.
Eckhart Tolle, okay. All right.
Maya Angelou.
Oh, yeah, Maya Angelou, certainly poet emeritus, and everybody considers her deep thinking or writing, absolutely. Who else?
Wayne Dyer.
Yeah, Wayne for me was, in fact, I got to do a quick history thing. When he first came out with his book, Erroneous Zones, I couldn't stand the guy. He was on Johnny Carson or something, and it was like, this guy's so full of himself. And the book to me was like, But you know what? Over the years, I think he indeed became a master. And when he spoke at the ICF conference in Phoenix in 2000, I think it was, or somewhere, he was unbelievable. Spoke for 6 hours with no notes. And I really think he became a realized being toward the end before he passed away. So I agree. So there's a lot of people that you can think about, and there's certain skill sets. We can think of a black belt in karate or beyond. We can think of people who achieve mastery and certain else. But with coaching, with the field we've chosen, you know, how does it get measured? How does it get quantified? I'm in the midst right now of the assessor training with the ICF, and it's like, oh, my God. It's interesting as well as providing brain damage, because I think we're getting so microcosmic and looking for proficiency and mastery. In fact, I would list it this way. If you think of your path, those of you who are getting certified or have gotten certified in coaching, you can get the board certified coach or the ACC, which is like competent, right? I mean, that's all we're measuring, competency. No other judgment beyond that, that you're a competent coach. And then I think to go a further level or to get more experience in the field, we become what I call proficient. So I think professional certified coach could also be proficient. You're proficient and skilled. You know, you don't just do okay coaching. You do pretty good coaching. And then mastery, we know it when we see it. Or we know it when we hear it. But everybody is going to have a different opinion. You know, if I shared a tape with you, in fact, next month, I'm going to coach somebody who's volunteered, and I'm going to try to be as masterful as I can during that moment. And some of you are going to think it was masterful, and some of you are going to think it was hogwash. So, because we don't know what it's going to be, right? And I think that's it. Somebody like these masters we listed, Yo-Yo Ma and others, I mean, you hardly ever see or hear them make a mistake. Now they do, and they all have their own coaches. Every one of those people I named have somebody who mentors with them. So in the field of coaching, there's all kinds of credentials, and I sometimes call that the alphabet soup of credentialing. There's even a new one in the wellness field. It's like so many letters, I can't even say it. But we've got, in addition to the ICF, and then there's CCE Global, Center for Credentialing and Education, which has the board-certified coach. There's the International Association of Coaching, the IAC, which has coaching masteries, which I recommend. In fact, I'll give you guys a link to that before the call, or I'll have Amy put it on a website, because I think the masteries from the IAC are good to look at, even if you don't choose to go for the certification. It's good language about what we're achieving to do in coaching our clients. The European and Mentoring and Coaching Council, EMCC, in Europe. They're even coming up with competencies for supervision in coaching, which it just detests me that we're getting there. I mean, that's just me. I'm somewhat heretical at times. Who's going to supervise the supervisors? That would be my question. So I think mastery is a place we want to get to. It's a place we sometimes do. It's a place we slip back from. In coaching, ICF is really the main cookbook, if we wanted to look at the ingredients, using the metaphor of a recipe, the ingredients of Masterful Coaching, the ICF kind of has good descriptors on their markers. They've got PCC markers, and then there's some documents that even show, so what would Masterful Coaching look like? But nobody's measuring it yet. I mean, they do. If people go for the MCC, you send in a tape, and two people listen to it, and I can tell you, sometimes people send in tapes that a Masterful Coach has reviewed, and then it gets rejected. It's like, differences of opinion, differences of insights. But we do want to, in our profession and in our life, go from competent to proficient to masterful. We want to look for ways to discern experience and refinement and artistry and innovation. I think those are key things. And something I want to really underscore for all of you listening to this is that coaching is an art and a science. Way back in the beginning, somehow in a group of people, we came up with that term, and I don't know who said it first, but it really stuck. People go, that's it. We want to formulate the art and science of coaching, which is kind of being and doing. And I think at one point in time, psychotherapy, psychology was trying to do that, and then it kind of adopted the medical model. And once you do that, you got to be more scientific instead of artistic. And so it's a dance that a lot of us do in the helping professions. If you put being before doing, here's some ingredients I think go into that. A mastery mindset. You know, that you actually are having a mindset of trying to be as masterful, as present, as connected, as available to your coaching clients. You want to look at artistry to emulate creatively. I mean, you know, every artist does things differently. We want to have a growth mindset more than a fixed mindset. So we're always looking for what can be, what can be different, what can be better. But let's look at some general concepts from a description of mastery that actually goes back to, two people I met back in the 70s that you might have heard their names before. One was George Leonard, who wrote a book on mastery that I referenced in my blog. George Leonard is an Aikido master and has been for decades. And in 1973 in Estes Park, Colorado, the American Humanistic Psychology had their conference there. And I went and got to observe him, meet him, watch him, breakouts, really amazed by what he had us doing, a little karate experiment so we could master our own mindset, right? Well, he's gone on to write about mastery, and I'm going to share some of that with you today. The other guy is Tim Galloway, who you might know from The Inner Game of Tennis, The Inner Game of Golf, The Inner Game of Skiing, and then he got popular in coaching and wrote The Inner Game of Work. He was actually discovered in England by John Whitmore, who's written Coaching for Performance, and John and I decided once we probably were at Esalen Institute at the same time, back in 69 and 1970, because that's when Tim Galloway was first discovered in America, being an Irish consultant, a tennis player and golfer, et cetera. Tim Galloway actually taught The Inner Game of Tennis in Estes Park, Colorado, while he was there at the conference, and I took his training to get better at tennis, which I play to this day. Little did I know the proficiency that he was teaching, the methodology, would also fit later in not only how I lived my life, but how I became a coach as well. So let me give you a little bit more about that. First about Tim Galloway. That's where I really learned the art of inquiry, which, as you know, is the basis of masterful coaching. His work in The Inner Game is based upon certain principles where an individual uses non-judgmental observations of variables that they notice in whatever they're trying to learn. So in other words, when he came to Orlando to the coaching conference, he had 300 people watching in a gallery outdoors on a tennis court, picked two people who had never touched a tennis racket in their life, didn't know the object of tennis too much, and without teaching them any how to hold the racket, how to grip it, what the object is to get it in the service court or whatever, he just said, we're going to start with bounce hit. I'm going to bounce the ball, you're going to hit it. bounce the ball, you're going to hit it. What did you notice? Where do you want the ball to go? What did you notice? How can you learn? How are you learning what you're learning in the moment you're trying to learn? So he, in 30 minutes, had these two people hitting the ball back and forth over the net. You know, not masterfully, but consistently. So that's the inner game. If the observations are accurate, a person's body will adjust and correct automatically to achieve their best performance. Yeah, if you want to go on and be a masterful player and win Hamilton and everything, you got to learn a lot of nuances. But the basics of the inner game get people to learn a lot by observing what they're learning as they're learning it. So then George Leonard comes into this parallel universe I have of Tim Galloway and George Leonard, and he writes in his very recent book, actually, Mastery, just came out a couple of years ago, 5 Keys to Mastering Anything. The first one is instruction. So, yeah, we want to learn how we're supposed to be doing something. What's the instruction for learning to be a better carpenter or to be, in this case, a better coach or whatever it might be? And then we want to practice. Depending upon what stage of your career you're at, if you're an ILCT student just in the foundational course or if you've been coaching for a long time, you still are practicing. You're still practicing getting better. You're still practicing engaging with new skill sets or new ways of doing your work. And then there's a key that he talks about that I think a lot of us forget, and that is surrender. We must also surrender, and I'll say more about all of these. The fourth one is our intentionality. What is our intentionality to what we're trying to do and achieve and do? And then the last one is called pushing the edge. There's a quote by Aristotle I like. We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. Well, the opposite of that is also true, that if we are what we repeatedly do and we're not practicing excellence, then what are we? We're getting better at what we're bad at. So if you want to be a better cook and you try 1,000 times to cook the perfect key lime pie and you always do it poorly, it doesn't matter how much you practice. You will need some instruction and you will need some change of skill sets. So mastery, according to Leonard, is this, and here's a quote from his book. I mean, according to, George Leonard. Almost without exception, those that we know as masters are dedicated to the fundamentals of their calling. They are zealots of practice, connoisseurs of the small incremental step. At the same time, and here's the paradox, these people are precisely the ones who are likely to challenge previous limits, to take risks for the sake of higher performance, and seem to be obsessive at times in that pursuit. Clearly for them, the key is not either or, it's both and. So you think of the outliers or the, what are they called in technology today, the disturbances, the people who are disturbing the status quo, because look what Apple did. You know, look what Microsoft did. Oh my God, look what Pokemon's doing. That's a sad joke. But I mean, the innovators and people on the edge that think of a new way, to think of what's beyond the now. And a lot of it has to do in mastery of any field and about the evolution of consciousness. Phil Jackson, who coached the Los Angeles Lakers for a long time, the New York Mets, and now is a manager of some other team, general manager. He wrote in a book called More Than a Game, in the long run, nothing's more important than the evolution of consciousness. Winning championships is the greatest feeling in the world, but it passes. In even the best case scenario, it is just a byproduct. What doesn't pass is the opportunity that it offers each individual player for personal growth and an evolving consciousness. So let's look at these 5 areas that George Leonard talks about, and then I'll open up the phones for some comments. The first one, of course, is instruction. So before we gain a level of mastery, we have to learn and be instructed on that path. We're learning a craft. In the old days, they had apprentices, and people from the craftsmen, whether they were bricklayers or carpenters or whatever, apprentice would learn from the master. And that's certainly what we do at ILCT in our coursework. We have many, many great teachers in the past that have moved on, and more today. If you've ever looked at the list of our faculty under About Us, I urge you to take a look at who's available for your teaching and use that learning you gain for the next key, which is practice. After you get past fundamentals and you're coaching as a coach, you know, eventually you add new skill sets, new techniques, new ways of offering your coaching, and that takes practice. Even though we use that as a descriptor of our coaching business, we say we have a coaching practice. But it's better understood as a verb. You really have to practice. You have to practice more and more to become masterful. And the cool thing about this profession is if we're practicing what we're good at in coaching, it also makes us a better person. This is one profession where, you know, maybe learning to be a better CPA and understanding the tax code, I'm not sure what that does to your transpersonal consciousness, but coaching does. We become better people. We become more of a model of not perfection, because it's not a place you get to and stop, but we get more of a model of mastery, having a masterful life. Remember the old joke about a couple that was on their way to a performance on New York's Lower East Side, and they stopped and questioned a bearded elder and said, "Pardon us, but how do you get to Carnegie Hall?" They ask, and he said, "Practice," he tells them. So that's really the truth. The third key in George Leonard's book on mastery is surrender. Now, this is probably not a term you've thought of much, although I know in our training, and when I used to teach the classes decades ago, sometimes the people taking our training had to kind of unlearn things. You had to surrender to this new, novel thinking that coaching was something different, but you didn't quite get it. How is it not like counseling? Well, how is it different from advising? And so eventually, to having a beginner's mind, what Zen teachers call a beginner's mind, and you trust the process. It will have ups and downs and clarity and fogginess, but it's not trial and error. I like to think of it instead as trial and success. So if you go back to Tim Galloway's work, bounce, hit the ball. You want it to go to the net. Where do you want it to go? What did you notice? What do you need to change? What needs to be different? And then keep learning and surrender to the journey. Sometimes things just don't work like we thought, or we had a coaching session and it just, boy, something didn't click. It might have been us. It might have been them. Just the process. Just ask for what needs to happen. What do I need to invite right now for what's helpful? And that leads to the fourth one, which is intentionality. To have intention. The power of the mental game and positive thinking erupted in the 70s with the writings of Norman Vincent Peale, and then there were techniques like the Silva method. Many years ago, there was the widely popular and I think overly commercialized The Secret, which had a lot of wisdom in it, but it also became a big selling gig. The truth is, it works. Positive thinking, and we even have a school of positive psychology now. There is much research on holding a strong intention of what you want and how you want to be in the detail. A masterful golfer, Jack Nicklaus, said that his successful shot was 50% visualization, 40% setup, and only 10% swing. How do you utilize intentions for you and your clients? And think of this, won't carry over directly to coaching, but there's been a episode of research in sports that's been replicated many, many, many times. And I probably first heard about it 25 years ago at I don't know what university it was at, but they took 60 people, all who could play basketball, and they had 20 practice free throws for a half an hour. Just take turn practice, knew nothing but shoot free throws from the 15-foot line. They had group two practice free throws for 15 minutes and then visualize the ball going into the basket for 15 minutes. Just actually visualize the shot. Then they had group three do nothing but sit on the court and visualize for 30 minutes the shots going in. Visualize yourself taking the shot, making the basket, and visualize that. And I bet you can guess which group, when they were actually told to shoot the ball, made the most baskets. It was the group that visualized only. Now, these were people that already had the skill sets. They were basketball players. But as you know, if you've ever watched basketball, some people make 90% of their free throws and some people can hardly hit the broadside of a barn. It's not that difficult once you learn the techniques, and yet people still miss it. So visualizing success is an important thing. And I noticed that in my tennis and in the golf that I do, and also in my coaching. So lastly, and then we'll hear from some of you, is the edge. And here's where mastery becomes a little paradoxical. In order to master anything, you have to be willing to explore the edge, new ways of doing things, new methods to achieve a success, new ways to get to a result. Masters try new ways. They do what they've learned and try new ways. So it's not either or, it's that both and. And as a coach, if you try newness on the edge, are you still being in service to your client? That's the litmus test. So if you, in fact, a masterful coach is seen as kind of being in a dance with a client. They're not so focused on the skills, and they just ask powerful questions because that's who they are. They're not trying to think of what's my next great question. And they create presence with the client just because that's the way they are. They're not trying to, let me be present now. Let me listen actively. So the path to mastery, according to Leonard, is one of short bursts of increased performance followed by slowly ascending plateaus. So if you can imagine a graph, do yourself a little vertical horizontal graph and have a line going up from competency to mastery, you're not going to go in a straight line. It's going to be like the stock market. It's going to go up, it's going to go over, back down, back up, over, down. But gradually it gets past a plateau, and then you learn other things. That works for getting fit, for stopping smoking, for getting better musical instrument, for golf, for writing, for running. Everybody that's masterful at something has learned to love the practice. And the path to optimal living doesn't have to be boring. When we surrender to trying new things, allowing ourselves to appear out of the comfort zone, we often discover rich rewards. And after all, the path to mastery is to know that there are no failures, only results. So given that, let's open the lines now. And you've been listening for half an hour. I want to hear what some of you think or some examples you have, any insights you got from the talking I've done so far, the information I've given. And I'd love to hear from anybody who wants to speak. No one? Push star 6. If we're not hearing you, maybe you are muted. Use stars. There we go. Amit?
Pat, this is Autumn.
Yes, Autumn.
I'm just wondering, you know, how you continue to evaluate your own performance. Need to be in some kind of group, or how do you continue to know where, have a sense of where you're at?
Yeah, good question. I saw you sent that in too, so I'm glad you asked it. You're live. You know, I always have a coach. I don't have a regular coach anymore, but I'm in a group of, we call ourselves the Wise Elders or Coaching Collective, and we meet, you know, every other month, and we might have chats with each other. I'm always learning, and I think when I try to keep my saw sharpened, as who said that comment? The 7 Laws of Success by, I can't remember, but, you know, you keep your skills sharpened. I do it now with groups of people that I want to be in conversation with. If I have a particular coaching relationship that I'm stuck with this person, or I'm finding myself not enjoying this kind of coaching anymore, I'll get some supervision or mentoring. I don't like to call it supervision. And the good news for me today is I can pretty much get that free if it's one call. You know, if I want to engage the services of a coach ongoing, then I certainly would do that. I urge all of you to have a coach while you're learning your skills and getting better. And as you get more confident and competent, which go together, then just know that there's lots of people that will certainly, as you meet them over time at conferences or in ILCT classes, just see if you can form your own little group. I mean, I know years ago this would have been 1998 when I was still teaching some of the very first classes with ILCT when I started it. There was a group in a class, they called themselves Coaches United. And there was about five of them or six of them out of that class. And they stayed together for years, meeting as a group, talking about each other's practices, coaching each other on marketing. So I think if you find a tribe, quote, that you connect with, form a group. Ask three or four people, keep it small, if they would like to have a co-supportive group. That's one way. A second way is I'm always looking for things that are on the cutting edge. And I get tired of buying the next greatest book because my bookshelves are crazy and I'm always giving away books. But I do a lot of reading of quick blogs. I do a lot of reading from trusted business journals, a little bit Harvard Business Review or others. So that's in my interest, leadership. And I think lastly is just make sure that you're doing something to develop yourself. In this field of coaching, I think we need to be pretty situated in our own wellness. So if there's crap going on in your life, take care of it. If there's things that are bugging you and getting in the way of being a vessel for your coaching, get some coaching. That's the best answer I can come up with in this moment. That's what I do.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else? Question or comment from what we've talked about so far?
Hi, Pat. This is Deborah.
Yes, Deborah.
I guess I want to ask you about the BCC. I understand the test is under revision.
Yes.
When is that going to come out?
Well, I will make this related to mastery because it is part of my frustration as well as my attempt to help the profession. It is, I wish I could say, the reason it's under revision slowly is because they're going to use an online process for people to create new questions, and it has to be done according to testing procedures. And I will admit, they're not very masterful in the redo of that test. But I would say it could, by the end of this year, I would guess.
Okay, I really appreciate that.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah. And by the way, this is kind of cool news. And it will relate it to mastery because, as the other woman asked a question of always, what can we do to engage our skills? And, there's coaching conferences, the ICF conferences. You're going to have regional conferences. I just came back from being a keynote speaker at the National Wellness Conference in St. Paul, Minnesota. And that's really my tribe. I mean, I like that. And wellness coaching has permeated the field there. The Center for Credentialing and Education, which... I'm sorry, somebody's speaking in the background. Can you mute yourself? The Center for Credentialing and Education has talked to Ellen and I both because we told them we think a lot of the BCCs would love to have a conference of just BCCs. And I think that's exciting because that's going to be a relatively small group. I mean, there's 4,000 some BCCs, but we wouldn't expect them all to come because there's 28,000 members of the ICF, right? Not all certified, but members. So I think that's good because that would be an opportunity to have masterful presentations, discussions that pertain to those that are board certified coaches. So that's something I would say. Anybody else? Question, comment? What, you know, this is really about mastery in your life, but also since you're coaches, mastery in your coaches and your coaching. Now, next month, I'm going to coach somebody that's volunteering, and I'll probably coach that person for 15 or 20 minutes, and then I'll just be transparent in asking for feedback. You know, what was masterful, what wasn't, what was helpful, what wasn't. Because if I get in the zone of coaching, I'm really going to forget you're all there and just coach this person as I would normally. Nobody else?
Hi, this is Catherine. I just have a question. I'm just wondering if you're looking at mastery in terms of excellence as opposed to reaching a level of perfection.
Well, I never used the word perfection, but I don't see those as non. If you said level of mastering a skill, I think it's the same. Excellence, mastery, yeah, I think those are the top tier. Do you have a different definition of each of those?
Oh, well, I'm just wondering, and just I should tell you that I'm a new student just in the foundation course, so I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not an expert by any means, but
yeah.
I was just wondering, like, if just say tentatively, if someone took on that term that I'm a master coach or something, that people expect perfection from them. I'm just kind of wondering.
Well, some people might, but I think you'd have to assuage that belief right away, because I tell all my clients, they might see that I'm a master coach. I said, that does not mean I'm perfect. I'm here to be as helpful to you as I can be. I'm a vessel for your conversation, and it's your life we're talking about anyway, not mine. So, but I do think, you know, you ask a good question, because I do think it beyond competence, as I said earlier, is proficiency. And then when you get excellent, you're beyond ordinary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not just an ordinary tennis player, you're excellent. And there's ratings. I mean, you can be a 4.5 or a 5.0 tennis player. It's hard for us to judge that in coaching. But the more you do it, the better you get. And since you're a new student, I'll give you the secret to great coaching and getting better, and that is learn from your clients. As you get clients and as you ask them, so what worked particularly in coaching today? Or could you give me some feedback on what was most helpful? I mean, that's always... I hope our teachers are teaching you that as you coach people, that you don't say, well, how'd I do? You know, or say, what could I have done? What wasn't working? But just ask for some feedback. And over time, if you have a client long-term, you can always do like a quarterly review or a 6-month review or something and say, what have you learned from our time together? And what was most helpful and what was most surprising? I mean, those are good, powerful questions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you get better. Now, here's the other thing. In psychotherapy years ago, there was a tape on a woman named Gloria. While I was in graduate school, there was a videotape of a patient seeing Carl Rogers, Fritz Perls, and Alfred Adler. Not Alfred Adler, I'm sorry. I'm forgetting his name. The guy who created rational emotive therapy. Doesn't matter. But here's a client who saw three different therapists of great renown, and then she gave feedback on the helpfulness of each one. Each one had something that was helpful, and each one had something that was not helpful to her. And she couldn't say which one she'd rather go to because she achieved help from all three. But she said, if you could blend them all together, it would have been perfect for me. Well, in the field of coaching, I've listened to dozens, maybe hundreds, of tapes and recordings and assessed ILCT students when you go for the final. So if Lynn, Mikey, and I observe you and we give a certain grade for your level of competency, somebody else might listen to that same conversation and have a different point of view. So we're actually trying to be efficient and excellent in the way that we hear coaching and not have our own biases get in the way, like, well, that's not how I would have asked that question, or that's not, you know, she was more silent than I would have been. I'm more active. So it's a tough call, and the reason I even have this topic and teach this class on mastery is that it is a place you get to as a plateau, but you don't stay. It's not like the top of the mountaintop and you're done. There's always a way to get better and newer and fresher. And I'll say this too, that I, both in my career as a psychologist and my 25 career as a coach, sometimes I just want to get out of the same. I need something new. I either need a new niche of clients, or I need to learn new skills or a new technique. Not that coaching is techniquey, but you know, every once in a while we do throw in secret spices and recipes, right, to be assisting them to the client. So maybe you learn something new that helps you with your coaching conversations, and that keeps you fresh. If you're not fresh and you're not energized, neither will your coaching be. Thank you for your question. Anybody else? This is hard to ask, but are there many of you who thinks that if I were to teach this 6-week class on mastery, like next fall or something, would that be something of interest to you? Maybe you can let me know, or we can post a question. It would be beyond this. We'd also look at the IAC's coaching masteries. We look at consciousness development of a coach, tools in the toolbox. It's exciting. I think it's a good conversation to have. So I'm doing that with Kansas Leadership Center, and I thought, I'd like to do it with ILCT too. So we'll put it out there.
Deborah, I'm in.
Okay.
When you talk about higher consciousness, I mean, I grew up like that, and in my growth and growing up, I have found so much resistance to this because so many people are just expected to be told what to do, and when you say, I'm not telling you what to do, I'm asking you what is within you that you want to do. And I have become a master of meeting people that resist that because it's such a foreign concept to them. So I am definitely in for your class.
Well, I like the term. Let me respond to that this way. In coaching, we're often talking about increasing the client's awareness, right? I mean, that's one of the competencies. Well, here's the deal. Awareness is consciousness. You know, we may be reluctant to use that term. My doctoral dissertation at age 27 was Transpersonal Psychology and the Evolution of Consciousness.
I love it.
So that was my book in 1977 when I was getting my doctorate. And it still permeates me today. So I am going to include a lot of that.